This is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
This morning, and welcome back to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, your station for fresh news and smart talk. It is another somber morning as we recognize the closing of the New Providence mango season. Nassau is the capital of the Bahamas, but North Eleuthera is the capital of mango season. And we want to say thank you to North Eleuthera for sharing as many of your mangoes as you did with us this year. We are so grateful that we're going to forget that mango season isn't truly over and y'all may be keeping the rest of the mangoes for yourself. We can forget that because we are so glad that you let us share in so many of your wonderful, juicy, tangy, sweet, sour, tart, syrupy mangoes. We say thank you. And if you do have a tree that still has mangoes on it, I beg you to remember the law and to call me because you are obligated to share the good news with the rest of the Bahamas. And we will stand up in our duty to support you in ensuring that every single mango gets eaten by a human and not a raccoon before the end of the mango season. Anyway, I want to thank you guys for sharing with me in this sad moment. I would like to thank those of you that did share mangoes with me this mango season, including Mr. Mark Palmer. Thank you very much. And for those that didn't share mangoes with me, I want to thank you as well for remembering that I may or may not have a predisposition to diabetes, and I should not be eating 1,000 mangoes in one mango season.
But let's be positive. Guavas are on the way.
An avocado. And the gnaps are on the ground.
And starfruit.
And hog plum.
And sugar apples.
And soursop. And cherry. And passion fruit. And mammy. And still dilly out there. There's no need to be sad. We can commiserate with our friends. Anyway, good morning, Bahamas. I want to thank all the people yesterday who called in to share their agricultural knowledge. That knowledge is as valuable as any other form of knowledge. And it's important for us to be able to transfer sort of individual knowledge into a collective knowledge base to ensure that we preserve said knowledge. Well, good morning. If it's a Tuesday, that means it's a Mark Palmer Tuesday. Today we are continuing our Sand Dollar conversation from last week. Tuesday, joining me in studio is Mrs. Allison Middleton, Media and Public Relations Specialist at the Central Bank of the Bahamas, and Mr. Luther Smith, Chief Information Security Officer at the Central Bank of the Bahamas. And we're picking up again our conversation, the sand dollar, myths, misconceptions, and misinformation. And so when the show gets started, of course, I'm going to throw out the numbers. We're going to have our sand dollar giveaway, but I'm inviting the audience to call in with their questions, concerns, and any information that they have about sand dollar that they're not certain about, that they're concerned about. And we have two of our local experts in the room to help us clarify any misinformation and get a sound perspective or understanding of what a CBDC is and why the Bahamas has implemented its own CBDC. So let me start by throwing out the numbers to call today, 323-6232, 325-4316, 325-4259, and 242-300-5720. That's 242-300-5720. So let's get going. Today, Tuesday the 18th and Wednesday the 19th of July, Central Bank representatives will be giving out sand dollars at Quality Supermarkets Seagrape Shopping Plaza. Show your sand dollar enabled digital wallet at the door and receive $20. Spend $18 or more in sand dollars at the register and get $5 back when you leave the store. This offer is limited to the first 100 customers to show their sand dollar enabled wallet at each location. One top-up per person, so as many people as possible can experience the sand dollar. For more details, visit any of the sand dollar social media pages or call 302-9880. That's 302-9880. Now for our first sand dollar giveaway of the day. Remember, every day for the next 3 months, we'll be giving away sand dollars to digital wallet holders. Every day, two winners can receive $30 in sand dollars. To be eligible to win, you must have a digital wallet and answer the question correctly. When you call in, give the producer your name and number, digital wallet provider, and your digital wallet address to transfer the funds to your digital wallet if you get the right answer. Listeners are restricted to one transfer for the duration of the competition. Again, you can only win once. Now, to my faithful trivia giveaway players, I've got Central Bank representatives in the studio, and I am going to put your petition to them. I've had a number of trivia players petition that they should be allowed to win more than once, and they are prepared to be restricted to maybe one win per month, if possible. They really enjoy the trivia, and they enjoy the opportunity to win sand dollars because they use sand dollars. So let's get to our first question of the day. What was the date of the Bahama Rock All Bahamian Concert? Remember, you got to have a digital wallet to play. What was the date of the Bahama Rock All Bahamian Concert? The date of the Bahama Rock All Bahamian Concert. And I see we got a caller on the line. Let me get to this caller right away. Good morning, caller.
Good morning, Aaron Gray. Good morning to your host.
Good morning. How you doing?
I'm fine. I ain't go off with that, but let me just say, before talking, my condolences to Gail and Sanders.
Gail Sanders. Yes.
On a loss, and I'm happy that they on a heart. The stage funeral are going to be on Friday.
Yes.
Yeah, so she's a great one. They need to talk about our greatness and history. And a proud Bahamian.
Absolutely. But I've got to organize to get some members of the community who could speak best to her legacy.
Yes, and one of them is Miss Ferguson from the Drunk Canoe program. Would come on. What her name is?
Arlene Nash Ferguson?
Arlene Ferguson. Be the best one.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also want to congratulate Bahamas team. Congratulations to New Providence and Crown Bahama.
We can talk about that on Friday.
Well, I just want to show them out there. And also congratulations to the commission headed by Leslie and Jack Thompson.
The independent secretary.
Yeah, secretary. Tremendous job they've done. More independent, and you can talk more about that, but she's an independent baby. I think she born in the middle 70s.
Okay.
I'm not sure.
I think she is younger than the independence, slightly younger than the independence generation, but like John Boswick,
right,
the second said, he could born, bred, and dead Bahamian. We're all the independence generation.
No, I'm saying, the reason I'm saying that, I am proud to know that our country's in good hands, and she's included in that. The baton.
Those are very wonderful words, Pumpkin Eater. I'm not talking about that today. You got me a little tongue-tied. I don't want to talk about that right now, Pumpkin Eater.
Closer.
I want to be able to offer authentic and sincere critique.
Sure. And closer, you talk about mangroves, right?
Yeah.
The last mangroves, and we used to grow mangroves on our farm, is mangolos in August.
Yeah, where the farm
where
is. Where is the farm? Did the mangoes be in, on the tree in late August, pumpkin eater?
Yeah.
I'm asking you.
Yeah, but I know they still do mango farm, and but back then we had it on our farm.
Okay.
The red.
Late August.
Start in August.
Yeah.
With the canaps.
Yes.
And the red and the yellow plums.
The hog plums.
Yeah, oh, I love them, the hog plums. But they do have the little round mango. I think they call them. I'm starting to be corrected on this one. I think they call them mangolos.
No. So mangola is a common term for all mangoes that are not hairy.
Okay, right.
Right, so there's no variety called mangolas.
Okay, sure, okay.
We are just discriminatory people. We have decided. No, it's a very slur-like term, mangola.
I glad you correct that, because a lot of people, they used to call them a long time ago, now called, you used to call them all of them, the round big set.
Yeah.
You used to call them mangola, and the eerie set is called them the...
juice mango.
The name. They certainly might be back to the hairy mangroves.
Yeah, common mango, juice mango.
Mango, something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, but those are the last round ones in August.
Thank you.
Have a good day.
Absolutely. I'm still mad at you that you ain't tell me where all this fruit is, where the August.
Where all the fruit is?
Yeah.
Top secret.
What I'm going to do, I'm going to WhatsApp you.
Okay.
You'll be able to pick it up.
Okay, I will.
But I'll tell you where to go.
Okay, thank you.
Have a good day.
Yes, man. And I promise that I will share a mango with somebody. Maybe multiple somebodies. Because that is our national duty, to share the joy and the love. Okay, guys, the first question of the day. What was the date of the Bahama Rock All Bahamian Concert? What was the date of the Bahama Rock All Bahamian Concert? Again, I've got some text, but texters, I need you to share your digital wallet information to receive the prize. On what date was the Bahama Rock All Bahamian Concert held this year? First ever Bahama Rock All Bahamian Concert. All right, let's get into our show. Again, joining us this morning from the Central Bank of the Bahamas is Mrs. Allison Middleton, Media and Public Relations Specialist, and Mr. Luther Smith, Chief Information Security Officer. And we are talking myths, misconceptions, and misinformation around the sand dollar. And we're inviting the audience to call in and share their concerns or questions so that the local experts can address them. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Bahamas.
How are you?
I am well.
And I'm wonderful.
I'm good. Good morning, Mark.
Hey, good morning, everyone.
Absolutely. So let's get right into it, guys. I yield the floor to you.
I have a question, actually, which has just happened literally the last week or so, and it regards the Brazilian central bank currency. And so what happened in their pilot, what was interesting is they allowed the public to audit the code. I don't know if you ever heard of anything like that, but so some of the blockchain developers went in and did an audit of the code, and they found two things which I'm sure they're not terribly worrying, but he said he found the existence. There's this guy, right? He's Pedro Magal. I don't know how to pronounce his name, but it's Portuguese. And he said that he found the existence of functions that empower central authority to freeze funds or reduce balances. Well, that in itself, I mean, I think we talked about that. You know, these are things that happen. You know, you can, in a normal course of business, you would do that. But one of the things he said was that the code lacked explicit specifications regarding the circumstance under which the tokens could be frozen and who possessed the authority to execute such actions. So I just saw that kind of an interesting thing. And I'm thinking that's something that's going to be covered in the legislation, that the authority to do that. You know, obviously you don't want somebody just to go and, you know, make these adjustments without the proper procedure being in place. Right?
And I would imagine that any state engagement in or activity with an individual's digital wallet must be first authorized by a court order.
Precisely.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm not exactly...
Mr. Smith, you have to speak directly into the mic.
Thank you.
Yes, yes.
So I'm not intimately familiar with the with the case coming out of Brazil. But what I can say is this. Our approach when we did the, during the pilot and the assessment of our CBDC, we didn't necessarily engage the public directly in terms of any code review. But what we did do is we did engage an expert third party to conduct that review on our behalf, and they provided us with all of the findings and observation and concerns that they would have seen, which we would have taken proactive steps to address. But speaking to the point of the ability, I guess, to freeze accounts or pretty much just make changes to accounts, whether it be debit or credit or, you know, close accounts, the fact of the matter is that that will be that capability naturally would exist, no different than would exist right. within mm-hmm. any financial framework, right? But there is a legal framework which allows for, or which would have to be followed and adhered to allow for those types of actions to take place, okay? Good. And along with that, in terms of the access controls parameters that we would have put in place, there are multiple levels of authorities or signatories within the system that would have to sign off and approve on these types of actions. So this is not held with one single individual, okay?
Mm-hmm. So that's very reassuring, mm-hmm. you know, because obviously if, you know, the bank should have the ability to change, you know, the amounts, if there's an error or if there's some transactional error, those sort of things are fairly straightforward. I think there's just a fear, you know, you're talking about, remember we're going to have a conspiracy Tuesday.
Yeah,
but there's a lot of fear that, you know, the government will just raid unchecked. And, you know, if they don't like somebody, they're just going to, you know, deduct the money out of their account and so on and so forth. So I'm glad that this framework exists to allow that not to happen.
And what I thought about was, particularly because a target audience for the sand dollar is elderly people, right? A target audience who would use the sand dollar because it's safer, a safer option than walking with cash, mm-hmm. right? It's a safer option than necessarily a credit card in many instances because you don't run the risk of the credit card being hacked or stolen. Your money is quite secure. But for elderly people who are also a bit, elderly Bahamians have a money culture of privacy. I don't need to talk to nobody about my money. My money is my money, right? A situation may arise where someone passes away with any amount of funds is significant, but with a significant amount of funds in a sand dollar wallet. And so then what is the procedure to gain access to that wallet, right? And to remove those funds or to have them transferred to the wallet of a family member. And so that would require the ability to go in, I guess, through a back door, particularly if the person passed away without sharing mm-hmm. their codes or their information, their access information for said digital wallet. Maybe even possibly in case of like a medical emergency, like there's money on the funds, there's funds on the wallet, hospital has to get paid, somebody got to access the money. In an emergency situation, I'm going to say, yes, you could access my wallet if you need to pay this medical bill, please.
Because that happened just recently with my mom broke her arm. But thankfully, before that, she put me as a signatory on her account. And so that worked just really, I mean, it was just really fortuitous. But I think that's a really good question. How do we, you know, is there a system in place that we can, like, get a signature on somebody else's wallet? I think that's probably the question
you're asking. In a backup. Erin Green, in the case of emergency, can have access to this wallet, you know? A concern that I thought about, particularly with older users and the culture that surrounds older Bahamians and money. But so you got a call on the line and a couple of texts with some great questions. Good morning, caller. You're on the clock.
Pleasant good morning, as usual, Ms. Green and your guest.
Good morning, Sparky. How are you?
Now, I presently don't have a sand dollar account.
Yes.
And I always call my age because I'm proud to be 72. Now, I've been through watching us change in my lifetime from pounds, shillings, and pence to the direct use of only the dollar one-on-one with America. Now, every day we got something coming up, Bitcoin, disinvestment. Now in the Bahamas, we're talking about sand dollar. What is the benefit it is to me if I get, if I go deal with the sand dollar, am I any interest or am I paying anything more? Am I still the same as using the dollar? I understand technology changing everything. Every day we wake up with some new technology they throw in our face. I still trying to learn how to use the phone itself. Because when I left the telco in 2009, we only had the Motorola and the Nokia. Hello, Moto. We couldn't text. We couldn't take pictures. We couldn't WhatsApp. Couldn't Facebook. Couldn't do nothing when I met. Now my grandchildren showed me how to use smartphone. I saw when Samsung came in first with when we went from what it is to anyway. And I'm trying to find out. I'm listening to all these new things coming. I don't know about you, Miss Green. But every day I wake up in my messenger line, somebody comes on board, some new person asking to be a friend. You say, okay. And everybody trying to get you to invest money in Bitcoin this, in this investment. It's like you can't keep them off your phone. They're filling up your phone with messenger, ask you to invest in this. And most of these people are very attractive people out of the Bahamas, asking you to send them on $500 and make $15,000 in a day. And it sounds so tempting, you don't know if you're being scammed or what, especially with this technology. When you send your money out of the country somewhere, you might not even hear from that person no more.
Absolutely.
But I'm trying to find out.
Yes.
What does it benefit me? Or I don't even know how to deal with the sand dollar.
A couple of questions. Thank you very much, Sparky. A couple of questions arose. Why would Sparky use sand dollar? How would it benefit him? And what are the advantages over traditional payment methods for someone like Sparky? The first thing I would say, Sparky, is if you have compromised or restricted mobility, right, whether it is due to a health issue or because of a lack of access to personal transportation, right, then the sand dollar becomes a beneficial tool for you to be able to participate in commerce, right, with your restricted mobility. So now you don't have to go to BPL to pay your bill. One of the things that we do most with it is we top up from home or from wherever we are, whatever location, we realize that, oh, my data plan's still good, but I ran out of minutes to make calls. I can top up quickly wherever I am. And that's one of the benefits. I think let's get into that. Why the CBDC? In fact, the text here says, we are the first in the world to do CBDC. That can't be good because who are we in the grand scheme of things but a puppet to the powers that be, physical cash. And I'll say this, we are the first to use CBDC. So there's a lot of, Mark, what's the tech word? The people who code do, there's a lot of testing to be done on the system, right? A lot of new things to learn. So...
I would just chime in on that particular point, right? Yes, we were at the forefront of
this
in terms of adopting it, right? But there was quite a bit of research worldwide that was taking place prior to the Central Bank of the Bahamas taking the initiative to move forward in this direction. But what we identified is that we had a very specific use case that made this very practical for us. And this was relating to the
archipelagical nature.
Thank you for the tongue twister there. Thank you. Right? Nature of the Bahamas, right? And we had a large sector of our population, right, that was underserved relative to being able to participate in the financial space.
Mm-hmm.
We had to move forward in the interest of the Bahamian people. And that is why we found ourselves, one of the key reasons why we found ourselves at the forefront of this. Right, we just didn't want to do something that looked or sounded nice. We had a real and practical use case that made this viable for us.
And from the perspective of an advocate, the government has an obligation. They have a constitutional duty to ensure equal and equitable access to commerce and to banking services across the archipelago. And it's not just a matter of equal and equitable with other Bahamians on other islands or in the capital, but equitable to with the broad range of services offered to Bahamians and foreigners within the Commonwealth of the Bahamas.
And just on the back end of that, I'll just also like to add this. That is not to suggest that there aren't lessons to be learned.
Mm-hmm.
We accept that. But again, this is the nature of things. But where we've put in place a framework, we've put in place a team that is consistently monitoring this solution from all aspects to ensure that at the end of the day, any gaps that are identified, any limitations that are identified, that they are addressed and responded to very quickly. So we accept that, but I think we have put in place a team and the controls necessary to ensure that we have a efficient and viable solution.
And that's the whole idea of a pilot as well, isn't it? It's a pilot.
Precisely.
Is that you're, you know, getting a viable product out of it, out of the end of it. Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. And so, you know, back to Sparky's point, why the CBDC and why should you use the CBDC? For many Bahamians, your reason for using the CBDC is going to be sort of far from the center. We, like Mr. Smith said, we're looking at people who are unbanked, underbanked on family islands where there are no longer banks, where there's limited staff available to service the ATMs and banking options that are available. And so Sparky, someone, a senior citizen, there are many benefits for using the sand dollar as an additional or an alternate payment method. But for many Bahamians, the sand dollar is the only payment method that is available to many people. And you could say, well, there's no restriction on there's no legal restriction on access to cash, but there is a technical, practical limitation or restriction to access to cash for many family islanders, and it becomes it's become an emergency situation. And I think if we got to take a snapshot of Andrus right now, immediately after the fire in North Andrus, right, we'll see that people are struggling with payment options and methods, access to cash, access to services. And we could see that we need this solution coupled with auxiliary or complementary solutions to ensure that every single Bahamian has equal and equitable access to commerce, to banking, to the access to the services and goods and transportation. And they can't do that if they don't have real-time access to fiat. And what Sand Dollar provides is real-time access to fiat.
Yes, it does. And we even refer to Sand Dollar as digital fiat.
Yes.
And so some of the benefits, additional benefits are, and there was a question that your caller raised was, is this interest-bearing? But it's not. It is just a digital version of cash. When you have cash in your wallet that's not in a bank, because it's not a bank account, you're not earning any interest on that. So same too, you will not earn interest on the sand dollar once it's in your wallet.
Mm-hmm.
And
his other question was about, will there be any charges? Like if I have my money in the bank, you know, they can charge me like $12
monthly
a month. Monthly
fee. So again, once your money is sitting in your wallet, traditional cash, banknotes and coins, in your wallet, no one's charging you fees for that. I found an old purse that my mom had, and I just found $300 that she always hid money. I just found $300 that she had. No one took any fee. It's still worth $300. Mm-hmm. Probably not $300.
I mean, you took a fee.
Well, I took the whole fee. I took it all.
Yes.
And if my daddy's listening, he's probably like,
I'm going to get my 10% soon.
So no fees associated with the funds that are in your wallet. There may be fees associated for transferring money in and out of the wallet, depending on if you're using your debit card to transfer money in, because Visa is charging the wallet providers a fee. Every time you use your Visa card, somebody is charged a fee for that.
Mm-hmm.
And so that fee is passed on to the wallet holder. But if you choose to use the solution that we have developed, which is through ACH, the transfer, so bank transfer, the only fee you would pay is how much your bank charges you to just do a third-party transfer. Right.
And wallet providers, I imagine, there is a small fee to, like if I go to the store and give them physical cash to then have put on my digital wallet, there's a small fee attached to that. Some of them.
Yes.
Right. And so for users, the informed user is the best user, right? The informed user is the safest user. And so I say when you are deciding which digital wallet provider you're going to go with, take the time to give them a call. Go to their offices. I've been to a couple. They have IT teams. They've been very helpful. And you sit and ask them, well, what are the benefits? And ask them, what are the differences between your wallet and other wallet providers? What are the advantages? What are some of the things that you don't offer that others offer? Because becoming informed leaves you in the strongest position to protect your assets. Absolutely. Is sand dollar intended to replace cash?
No. Sand dollar is not a cash replacement. It is a cash alternative. And that's something that we have been spreading from the very beginning. One thing for us, even when we do our events, we make sure that sand dollar and cash, and if the person wants to accept Visa and MasterCard, that sand dollar is not just the only method of payment, just to really drill that message, is that it is not a cash, it's not intended to be a cash replacement, not in the Bahamas.
Mm-hmm.
And we're only talking about sand dollar in the Bahamas. It's not a drive to sneakily move the country cashless, not at all.
Yeah, and I think just to add to that, to allay any concerns around that, I think I can go on record to say that the central bank is making further investments in its cash processing facilities and capabilities. So that in and of itself says we're modernizing that environment. Mm-hmm. So that in and of itself says that we have no interest in moving away from cash. We're continuing to make investments in our cash operations.
Absolutely. Now, who governs or arbitrates disputes between users? And I think that's most important, between users and merchants and between users and wallet providers.
That would be the same body that arbitrates disputes between the banks, the traditional banks, and the wallet providers right now.
Okay.
And their public. And that is, if there is no resolution, the next thing is to escalate it to the Bank Supervision Department at the Central Bank of the Bahamas.
All right. Is there a place online, a website, or is there a form, a document available at wallet providers, at those companies that provide this service, that the user can look at that gives instructions? Here's what to do if you have a dispute. Here is the agency that you contact. Here's what to do if you have a dispute with your wallet provider. Gather your documentation from your phone. Identify clearly what the dispute is. Go in to see this, right? There's a compliance officer in each company. Is there any central location where people can access information that explains these steps?
Because like on a debit card, you flip it over, right?
And
it
gives
you
a number. Right, on the back of the debit card,
and you just call that number, right?
And right, and are there plans to standardize across wallet providers the procedures, right? These sort of basic procedures and websites, for instance, you know, instructions should be clearly available or accessible, easily found on the website when you access it, things like that.
Or maybe in the wallet itself.
Right, the app that constitutes the wallet, yeah.
So we are looking at ways to standardize certain things amongst the wallet providers, and finding information or where to find help is one of those.
Yeah.
And while I do know that some of them have published this type of information on their websites, I cannot confidently say that all of them have.
Mm-hmm.
But that's also something that we should make sure that we have clearly stated on the Sand Dollar website. Mm-hmm. And I know that we don't.
Right.
So that's a really good takeaway from me. from this conversation is that is definitely something that we need to move to enact rather quickly.
Mm-hmm. And how quickly would it take? Because, you know, it's like if you take somebody to court, you know, it could be 5 or 6 years. You know, you want to have confidence in the system. You want it to be resolved, you know, pretty rapidly.
Right. And for, like, people who pay rent on a weekly basis, mm-hmm. right? And, mm-hmm. and so their situation is a little more urgent than others.
Yeah. But, and through, just to add to it, my colleague stated, yes, as she indicated, we may not be able to go on record relative to what each individual provider is doing or how they make that information available. But we have, at the central bank and through the team, have formulated a Sand Dollar hotline where persons can call in, ask questions, and if they have some complaints, they can raise those directly with the central bank. It may require them being redirected to their AFI
right.
That onboarded them, but at the end of the day, we still can serve as a point of contact to provide some direction.
Right, and I'm sure that'll provide a great degree of confidence for users, right? That the central bank stands as a part of the process. Another text, and then I get a question. Text says, morning, if I use the Sand Dollar to buy something, is a fee taken from the Sand Dollar balance?
No.
Right, no. When I use my SunCash wallet to purchase groceries, there is no fee extracted outside of the cost of the groceries and the VAT. Right, that what I would pay in cash is exactly what I pay using my Sand Dollar wallet.
Yes, the fees assessed with transactions on Sand Dollar are the merchant. It's a merchant profile or that model. Right. So the merchant pays the fee.
All right. Another concern for Family Island residents in particular. Can I access my cash? Like, so Sand Dollar wallet providers, can they or do they provide kiosks? Like, I know there are kiosks where I can put money on my account, but are there kiosks available on the Family Islands where I can withdraw cash in case of an emergency?
Some of the wallet provide, two, in fact, have kiosks that do both cash in and cash out.
Okay.
You can see some of them around the island, definitely New Providence.
Is that the big orange box?
Well, not the orange box, but that one is actually their green box, and then they have a taller one that's white.
Okay.
That I don't know that they've rolled that out yet. But then so I'm talking about SunCash and Island Pay.
Okay.
Island Pay has several locations in New Providence that you can actually see the cashing in and cashing out.
Okay.
You can call SunCash to find out exactly where their cash in and cash out machines are. Right. And similarly, you can call Island Pay. But both of them and the other wallet providers are looking into perhaps investing in additional machines that they can roll out to the Family Islands to really shore up and support. Yes, Sand Dollar is great, or you're going to pay me in Sand Dollar. I'm not yet comfortable with it.
Yeah.
Or I need to go to the grocer who's not quite comfortable with it. They only accept cash. And so I now need to transfer these Sand Dollars into physical mm-hmm. dollars. And let me go to this machine. The kiosk can take it off.
Have you guys engaged the Bahamas Christian Council?
We have been speaking with the Christian Council for quite a while just to, you know, get feedback. But we had a session with them about 6 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. But if you go to the Sand Dollar website, we have, I don't know if it is, if we can say that it is a, he's being an advocate, but the head of the Christian Council did give us some very, very positive, some positive feedback.
No, because I was thinking one of the biggest issues with the lack of access to cash, particularly on the Family Islands, is tithing.
Yes.
Right? And churches would be interested in engaging this conversation after hearing multiple people like Aaron Green say, oh, Pastor, I have no cash today. You don't take sand all day. Let me give you this tithes and sand dollars. But to facilitate the continuance of commerce in spaces where it's extremely important, right? And that's a cultural thing. That's not commerce. That's cultural. Tithing is important for Bahamians, you know?
The other cultural thing is privacy, right? Because I remember, just from civil society, you know, when we do surveys of people, they, you know, very suspicious who's going to use that data, who's going to get into their business. And so I think one of the concerns, certainly from my perspective, is data protection and consent. And I know we have very strong Data Protection Act in place right now. And there's some concerns may include, you know, potential misuse of that data, because there'll be a lot of transactional data, unauthorized access, or the lack of control over financial information. I mean, do you see that as a problem? The privacy? I mean, is that data going to be respected? It's not going to be sold off to a third party, because I think that's other people's concern, you know, because...
Which is separate from, like, a security issue. That, you know, that's my concern. Selling of information has become an industry now, mm-hmm. right? And so the first thing to say to the audience is, whenever you are getting a new app, you're uploading a new app to your phone, or you're signing on to a new service, you got to read the fine print. You have to read the fine print. You have to take time to read the fine print. In the U.S., there's now legislation that ensures that the fine print has to be reasonable, right? Mm-hmm. Like, first of all, people have to be able to see it. Second of all, people have to be able to understand it, right? But ultimately, the onus is on the user to read, you know, to read the fine print.
How many of us do, though? That's the thing.
Well, this is it.
Because it's pages and pages. I just tick it.
Because most of the apps that we have on our phones enable the app developer or owner to take whatever information they can access from your phone, not just relative to the game itself, but other information, and they can sell it to other app developers, to...
I mean, should we be worried that our data is going to be transacted in some way?
Right. As the landscape shifts rapidly, is there legislation governing this generally, access to information with new digital services? Who controls it? Who can sell it? Who owns it? And for what purposes can it be used?
So I'll chime in here and say this, that, you know, your concern is noted. There is a Data Protection Commission, right, that was charged with the protection of personal information. And through their legislation, they have established rules and guidelines that govern how entities manage your personal information. Now, here's what it boils down to. Are these entities... organizations following those guidelines? What the central bank has done, and this is specifically with respect to San Dollar, what we have done is we have done every AFI, authorized financial institution, wallet service providers, as we refer to them, had to undergo a robust cybersecurity assessment, both for an application and an architectural assessment, right? An organizational assessment, I should say. And within that, we were able to identify the types of controls that they have in place, right? So we're satisfied to a degree, right, that these organizations that would have been onboarded, that are participating within the San Dollar space as wallet providers, are practicing or acting in the interest of the Bahamian people with respect mm-hmm. with respect to adhering to privacy, protection of personal private information.
Yeah, because it would only take one breach or something like that to lose confidence in the whole, you know, the whole exercise, which is
let's go to caller just before we go to caller. Okay. So if I watching the wallet transactions and I see Erin Green buy a dress, and then Erin Green
and
it's a wedding dress, and then it's tickets. Hold on, they go tickets to go somewhere fancy, honeymoon esque. And I keep seeing this. Look, I selling that information to the bunch. I selling that. That's value. I can make money on that.
Yeah, yeah. And which punch that is?
The 1-2 punches. And sell it to, but right there. You can understand how people are prompted to but we're relying on legislation, protocols, and regulatory frameworks that already exist and that are already being applied in other area financial services.
And perhaps being enhanced in consideration of advancements that are taking place.
Yes. Absolutely. We got a caller on the line. Good morning, caller. You're on the clock.
Hi, how you doing?
Good, thank you.
Enjoying the show. Very good show.
Thank you.
Let me just say that I am adversarial to the electronic currencies. Let me just get that. I'm very biased against it, simply because student of history, and I have never seen in history where a government ultimately could be trusted in anything. The question that I would have, how much monitoring capability does the government have into transactions that private people make? Do they have 100% monitoring capability or 90% capability? That's the first question. The second question is the government able to block transactions to parties that they don't agree with? And what level would they be able to block transactions? I'll hang up and listen to your response.
Absolutely. Thank you. Very, very good questions. What's the monitoring capacity or capability of the government in terms of personal transactions and then the government's ability to block particular transactions? So like if we start with the latter, we know that in China they have a very restricted social media space. The government has determined what apps can be accessed in that domain. I think of a situation where, you know, somebody would say, hey, listen, we're opposed to this LGBTI stuff, and we're going to block access to purchases from certain particular companies, right? Like, I could see that happening in jurisdictions in the region. And so is there an inclination? Is that the road that we're heading down? And does the technology allow for that to happen? With the former, I imagine that it's the AFI, it's the wallet provider that has first access to the transactions and not any government agency, unless it's the SanDollar app, in which case Central Bank of the Bahamas staff have first contact with user information.
So just before we get started, I want to clarify that the Central Bank is not a part of central government.
Right.
And so the central bank and whatever access the central bank has to your banking information and or to your SanDollar wallet, that is not accessible by central government.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So that's just first and foremost. And then secondly, the question regarding the blocking of or restricting where you're spending. SanDollar, again, is a digital version of cash. And I know I say this all the time, but it just really simplifies it, I found, as we're explaining.
Yes.
You cannot, or we do not right now, Central Bank has not said you cannot spend cash here. You cannot spend cash, physical cash, there. And so Central Bank does not have a desire to restrict where you can spend your digital currency. Is it possible through the technology? Yes, it is. And in the example that I gave last week, U.S. Social Services are giving out, they're remitting funds on what we call food stamps, are not stamps anymore. It's on a card. Mm-hmm. Which is basically like a Visa, MasterCard.
Right.
You can only spend that in certain stores because they don't want you to take that and then take a trip to Bali
on
taxpayers' money.
And on your children's school fees.
Precisely. Yeah. On what should be used for that. But the agency would decide that. Or the merchant can decide that. That isn't something that central bank would regulate and or restrict.
Absolutely. See, because I for it, though. Y'all don't let me be the prime minister. I for it. First of all, you wait for Ministry of Works. You can't buy no cold patch with my digital wallet. Can't buy no cold patch. And then there's an even more serious consideration, like when we're talking, linked to the social services perspective, right? Like we're talking about people, like if you've been, for me, if you've been convicted of a serious traffic offense, of manslaughter or killing in while driving, and it's alcohol related, then I may, for the purpose of your penalty, I may restrict your ability to spend your sand dollars in liquor stores, right? Like I could imagine that. And I think there are some purposes, but again, the central government does not have access to anybody's information or funds without a court order, right? That would be that would arise through existing regulatory and legislative frameworks. And no, I don't think the government, central bank, anybody is in the business of restricting how you could spend your money.
Precisely. I think there's a lot that's being said in terms of what the solutions are capable of doing.
Mm-hmm.
But I think what we need to focus on is what the CBDC, or the sand dollar in our case, is envisioned to provide to the Bahamian people.
Mm-hmm.
Those additional capabilities that arise as a result of technology, mm-hmm. the potential just exists, those aren't our interests. Mm-hmm. All right? We have very specific interests, and those have been carved out in the framework and in the legislation that has been drafted.
Absolutely.
Which aligns, as my colleague would have said, aligns directly with the use of cash.
Absolutely. Good morning, caller. You're on the clock. You get 30 seconds flat.
Good morning, Ms. Green. How you do?
I'm good, thank you.
Good morning to your panel there. I have about three. I had four questions, but you lost me with one. One, how many sand dollar cards or wallet can I have? 1%.
How many phone numbers do you have?
Or they go with phone numbers?
Well, right now, well, most of them do. But at each wallet provider wants to limit, they prefer to limit you to one.
Per phone number.
So me and somebody won't be able to share a wallet?
You can share a wallet. Right now I share my wallet, so.
Okay, next question. How much am I allowed to put on this wallet?
The maximum you can put on a personal wallet is $8,000. That's the maximum it can hold.
That's enough to buy a car. And the last one, can I get robbed? Can somebody hold me at gunpoint and rob me with my sand dollar wallet?
Yes, they can hold you at gunpoint, and they can say, transfer all of that money to my wallet. When you do that, there is a record that says that you transferred the money to their wallet.
You got two options. Smile. First of all, just keep smiling and transfer the money.
Yeah.
And take a picture quietly while you're transferring it. Like, tell them my eyesight bad, and hold it right to your face and take a picture. So you could accompany the picture with the transaction record when the police go for them.
Would they know who I transfer the money to?
Exactly. Yes. They will do.
Okay, but they can get cash automatically. That's no problem. Mm-hmm.
All right.
That's some things I was concerned about.
Thanks. If you panic, here's what to do. Break your phone. Just panic. Like old people panic and throw the phone hard and break it. And say, oh my goodness, I can't transfer the money no more. My phone broke in.
And then I did.
No.
What you think happened there?
No. They could be like, look here, y'all old people, y'all is be annoying. That's what they can say. Y'all old people is annoying me. Pops, go home. Don't be on this road. That's what they can say.
No, but I can take that then. I can try it out.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Thank you very, very much. Absolutely. Listen, guys, to the caller on the line, I'm so sorry. We're all out of time. But I thank you for calling so late in the show, because now I'm compelled to say to my guests, please, we must do this again, if not next week Tuesday, the following Tuesday. But, you know, people do have concerns, they do have questions, and I think it's great to have an opportunity to speak directly to the experts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Absolutely. We agree.
Yeah, and I think too, you know, we're encouraged by the level of interest. I mean, because we want to do this. We want to get the questions. We want to field the questions, and we want to get them answered.
Absolutely.
And again, I even as my colleague indicated earlier, there's at least one takeaway that she has. So that's mm-hmm. a good thing. That's a positive thing.
Absolutely. Last text is producers. I'm sure he's playing the music. I'm going to, in fact, text 6891. I'm going to show them this question. So when they come back, they're prepared to answer it. And the last thing is, how do NGOs and special interest groups connect with the central bank, right, to ensure that they're creating organizations that can participate in the development of the sand dollar and CBDCs in the Bahamas? That's for our next discussion, because an informed user is a secure user. Thank you very much, Mrs. Middleton and Mr. Smith, for joining us today. Thank you, Mark. Even though you didn't bring any mangoes, we shall not turn you away. Dear Bahamas, have a wonderful, wonderful day.
Yes, good day, Bahamas.
Thank you.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.